You've been performing for Flappers Comedy Club.
Sure.
I don't know if these are live shows, remote, or what's going on there?
Yeah, they're live shows. Yeah, they're Zoom show. You know, so I'm in my house. I've got a guest bedroom here where it's all set up, and I just, you know, and you know, these Zoom shows, I don't know how I'm doing. You'd have regular crowd.
Killing.
It's like, oh, that joke didn't go so well, or this is a good crowd, or whatever. This is like, hey, you got me. I had one, and some of them, not necessarily Flappers, they don't do this, but other shows had do where they go, don't worry, we muted everyone in the crowd. It's like, well, wait. So we can't hear any laughs? Like, and I know they don't want, because you can hear people's lawnmowers or, you know, there's babies crying or whatever. And, you know, with Zoom shows, one loud person takes over the whole thing. Yeah. But you do like to hear a little bit of feedback, you know. I'm always looking in the chat to see if anyone says something nice or liked a joke or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Well, you are the king of jokes, especially on Twitter. So I really do enjoy your tweets.
Well, thank you so much.
Just heard comedian and author Brian Kiley. Brian's been a staff writer for Conan O'Brien since 1994 and is currently the head monologue writer for Conan's show on TBS and has served in that role since 2010. I'm Greg Bidet, listening to the Portland Podcast. We'll be featuring Aaron Guzikowski, the creator and writer of Raised by Wolves, on HBO Max. He'll be on our podcast very shortly. We'll also be featuring comedian Joe DeVito. His latest comedy special, Dating Over 40 is Like Thrift Store Shopping, has accumulated over 3 million online views. But now, more from Brian on his work on Conan and his latest work of fiction, which happens to be his second published book, Maybe Kevin.
Hello, hello. Is this Brian? This is Greg from Portland. Hello, hello.
How are you? Can you hear me okay?
I can. I'm doing a sound check right now. So we are recording, and it's great to connect with you, sir.
Great. Oh, great to connect with you. Thanks for calling.
Oh, yes. Yes, I actually just finished your book, your latest book, Maybe Kevin, last night, and a very satisfying ending, if I might say.
Oh, well, thank you. So I'm so impressed that you actually did. You read both of them?
Just Maybe Kevin, but I am familiar with the first book, The Astounding Misadventures of Rory Collins. You haven't talked too much about that book, and in interviews you don't talk too much about your literary work, but that intrigues me. I mean, this is a different side to your work, and it's, you know, you cover a lot of death and schizophrenia, Alzheimer's, and there's two parallel stories in Maybe Kevin.
I think what happened was after my first book, I had a literary agent said that books do better when you have a female protagonist.
Really? Is that true? So, oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. And I thought, And so that was so I said, all right, let's see if I can have a female protagonist. But then I had to add a male protagonist as well. So I had the two stories. And, you know, first of all, I thank you so much for reading that. That's really above and beyond. But I guess I don't even know why, how these stories come about. I mean, the story about the Tom was sort of very loosely based on my dad in that.
Really?
You know, my dad was a World War II vet and was in the Battle of the Bulge and so on.
It's a way of revisiting that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I had to laugh when Tom got annoyed with his fictional girlfriend.
Thanks.
I think we've all done that at some point.
Yes, we two kind of concoct things in our head, and then you're like, wait a minute, you made that whole thing up. What's your problem?
Yeah, so you had to get into the mind of a 30-something woman. What's that like, delving into that world? My goodness.
You know what? I think part of it was, I think I just liked her so much.
She's a lot like you in many ways, in many respects.
Well, we're both very feminine, and people write in different ways. And I know some people make things very concrete and like to use facts. Whatever. And then there's other people that kind of like to let their imaginations kind of roam free. And I kind of prefer that method too. Of a lot of times when I start a chapter or something, I have an idea where it's going. but it kind of takes a life of its own, and you go, oh, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. Now you published two books in quick succession. Is there another book on the way? I mean, you've got an empty nest. You've talked about this. You talked about this on a Metapod podcast, which was fascinating, by the way. You really opened up in ways you haven't in any other show, and I'd like to touch on that too. You talk about this time on your hands after your children grew up and they've left the house and. You had this time and, it was kind of a dark period for you. I'm curious how that influenced you, your work and, plans for the future, or more writing, more fiction.
Yeah, I am working on something now, and I definitely think it was very difficult for me when my kids left home. And, my daughter was she actually got COVID in March.
You talked about this before, yeah.
Yeah, so she came home and it was a little frustrating because she was home for 4 weeks and
you couldn't really hang out with her. Yeah.
Couldn't hang out with her, So that was a drag. But then once that got over with and I had some nice time with her this summer. But yeah, I mean, that is a thing. And she's off to graduate school now. And my son lives in San Francisco and he's going to be going to law school next year. So there is that thing of, oh, they're not coming back, and I even joke about it in my act saying, my kids are English majors. So, which is great because they'll be moving back home soon, and I do, I think for me, the best time in my life was when my kids were little. And so you're looking at the rest of your life. And yeah, I guess I think I've had to sort of deal with a little bit of, just dealing with that emptiness has been difficult for me.
Well,
I guess.
I mean, you certainly have enough books to keep you busy. I mean, my goodness, I've seen interviews with you. You can see all your books on the bookcase. I'm actually curious about what you're reading, what your influences are. I mean, so many books. You quote a lot of Gladwell, the Outliers book. His latest book's great. There's a new book, The Dynasty, by Jeff Benedict, that covers the Patriots. I know you're a big Patriots fan. That's like the bestseller on Amazon right now. So maybe that's in your queue. I'm curious. Influences and books you revisit because, I'm curious about your influences.
I think that I'm so impressed with your research about me. Good Lord.
I do a bit too much, actually. I do a bit too much.
No, I love it. It's very impressive. It's funny because I do read a lot of history books and people assume that I only read history books. And it's like, no, I mean, I will, especially, if you read a 600 page book about Napoleon, then I'll like to read like a nice little quick novel to kind of cleanse the palate, So I'll switch back and forth. I try to read good novels. It's so funny because I accidentally read a bad novel recently where I have the app on my phone, like the library app. Yeah. And the book I thought I was clicking on, I actually clicked the book underneath by mistake. So that was on my queue. And I'm like, what's this book? And I'm like, well, all right, I'll give it a shot. And I can't tell you the name of it. I don't even remember the name of it. But it was this sort of, it was almost like an action story, I guess, almost like a spy story or something. But it was the kind of thing of, oh, it turned out that he had a twin, identical twin, and the twin was bad. And then when one chapter ends when he dies, and then the next chapter says, oh, wait, he's still breathing. And then when I go, no. You can't do that. You can't tell us he died and then in the next chapter go, oh, I made a mistake, he didn't die. That enraged me. So especially where I'm really normally reading I try to read well-written novels. So then when I read a bad one like that, it's like, whoa, whoa, what's happening here? I have been going through it. I've been reading all the Pulitzer Prize winning novels. And they're so good. Like whoever picks them. One thing amazes me is there'll be some years where they go, there's no winners. It's like, what? You're telling me thousands and thousands of books are published. Right. None of them are any good. It's like, come on. Like, but those books, there's a guy named Colson Whitehead, who he's won two Pulitzers in the last 4 years for best fiction or best novel. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The only people to win twice before him were John Updike and William Faulkner. And I feel like this guy, he's not famous enough. He should be more famous. I mean, I'm sure he is in literary circles, but he's not a household name. And he should be. That's unbelievable, you know? I didn't read that much as a kid. I read a lot as a little kid, but then as I got junior high and so on, I was incredibly lazy. And I remember reading the book Jaws, and I had 50 pages to go, and I didn't bother read. It's like, who wouldn't want to read the ending to Jaws? Like, what is your problem? But I had no attention span. I was incredibly lazy. And I just, all through high school and all through junior high and high school, I was incredibly lazy. And I didn't read, maybe a sports book once in a while, but that was about it. And then it wasn't until, here I am, an English major in college. So my junior year, I was kind of like, oh, I see, you read. And you acquire information and things. You learn about things.
Yeah.
Someone should have told me that earlier. So then I really got into reading. And I remember when I was a senior in college, I got in a terrible car accident, and it was my fault. Like, I couldn't even blame anybody else. And I totaled my car and so on. And it was right after bad things always happen around my birthday. And it was right around my birthday. And I remember I was taking this class. It was like philosophy of literature. And it was, so we were reading all these great books. We're reading Ulysses and the Death of Ivan Ilyich, yes, and the Metamorphosis and Madame Bovary and the Cherry Orchard. And it was just, Crime and Punishment, I can't remember, but it was just a bunch of classics, and they're all kind of dealing with life and death and so on. And, you know, by just brilliant authors. And I was in a very philosophical phase because my life was kind of in shambles after my accident. And I think that really kind of propelled me of like, it's like, oh, this, I remember in high school, I would have thought all that stuff was boring. And then senior year of college, it was kind of like, oh, this is actually fantastic, you know?
I went through the same thing. I mean, you know, once you realize that you're picking up so much information and you can actually use it in a pragmatic way, you're a very pragmatic guy. And, you know, you write so much. You said up to 50 jokes a day. This must have influenced your writing and your writing jokes and, I mean, given you so much to pull from.
Well, I'm a little bit obsessive, which I think helps if you're a joke writer. I think absolutely. I think the wisdom that you learn from these great writers when you're reading, because people like there are people that don't like fiction, and they feel like it's useless, that you should only be reading nonfiction and whatever. Yeah. But I think that there's a lot of wisdom. And also, you're in someone else's shoes.
That's true. You're stepping out of your own world.
Absolutely. And it's so important in the world that we look at now of nobody puts themselves in the other person's shoes and see how what they're going through, you know?
That's a great point. That's a great point. It's a good reason to read fiction. Plus, it helps you sleep better at night, I think.
It does. I remember, you know, in Death of Ivan Ilyich, he's got this low-level government job, and he kind of got married because it was the right time and all that stuff. And his greatest joy in life was when he would play cards with his friends and he would win a little bit. Because if he won a lot, then there's bad feelings and it was unpleasant. So, and I just found that so fascinating that this is his greatest joy in life, is playing cards with his friends and just winning a little bit, you know? And I feel like a lot of us, there are things, it's like, what is your greatest joy in life? Is it when your team wins the championship, or is it, what is it exactly, you know?
Well, you've had a few championships yourself there as a New England fan, so good for you. I guess we could talk about your day job. Apparently, you love this job. You know, you mentioned this, I think, in another interview. Conan's a very good editor. And I think that's probably the best trait you can have as the host of a show.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because I think he, you know, we'll present sketches or we'll give him our jokes and whatever. And you know, to be honest, there are times when I write a joke and I think it's not... It's almost there. Yeah. It's a funny idea, it's the joke's not quite getting the point across that I'm trying to, whatever. And I think he's very good at rewriting my stuff. It's funny because my daughter interned one summer, and you know, she got to watch rehearsal where it would present a sketch and it would be very funny. And she'd be like, oh, that was great. And then Conan would say, okay, that stuff at the beginning, we don't need that. And on this part, you don't need that last thing, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
He very quickly, she was saying to me how impressed she was at, because she looked at it and be like, well, that would seem perfect to me. And then when he pointed out things, you're like, oh yeah, that was too long, or that didn't, needed fixing or whatever. So
that's so impressive. The pacing is so important for a show, especially now you're down to 22 minutes. You gotta pump it out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, he's a brilliant guy, and it does help, because sometimes, you know, there are people who, I used to work with a guy who was not prolific at all, but he was great at tweaking jokes. You know, he could take your joke that was 80% there and make it 100%. And even though at the end of the day, he didn't get many jokes on, he fixed three or four jokes every day, you know, which was hugely valuable. I think it's the same thing. If you're a novelist, you want to have an editor that has a good eye and is able
exactly,
to
yeah.
make things better. Yeah. yeah.
And you said this too about, you know, writing like 50 jokes a day is not a good day for you. You want to add some nuance, you want to tweak. So that's very important.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's that old thing about the, you know, sorry that the letter I wrote you was too long. I didn't have time to shorten it. And it is that thing of when you do rewrite, you cut out the fat and you just condense things and make it better, you know?
It's what if it's fantastic. I get a kick out of it. You're very prolific. And I noticed
well,
you follow,
thanks.
You know, the philosophy Twitter page of School of Life. I'm a big fan of School of Life. And you also follow Brian Regan. Brian Regan came here to Portland last month during the peak of COVID, and there were 50 people there. He was literally right next to me, and it was incredible. And I wondered why he would do that. And all I could really come up with surmise is that he just loves performing. And even for 50 people in a comedy club, it was an incredible experience to be that close to the master, Brian Regan.
Well, he is the master. And I think absolutely, I think he loves to perform. And he's very generous with younger comics or other, you know, whatever. Like it's such a great thing to have that guy at the top. You know what I mean? You know, because if the master was a terrible person, that would kind of filter down. But no, he's a great guy and such an amazing comic. You know?
Yeah, full head of gray hair. Was not expecting that.
It enrages me.
Yeah, that, I'll take any hair at this point.
Are you kidding? Oh, my God, yeah.
I'm actually curious about that part of your life. You just became comfortable. You just didn't get hair plugs or...
It was so early. You know, I was bald by 22.
Oh, man. Wow.
And starting out in comedy. So that was like, and now that I'm old, I'm kind of like, well, you know what I mean? Like it's now I'm supposed to be bald. You know what I mean? I wasn't supposed to be bald back then, but yeah.
It is what it is.
I definitely think like I'm you know, not that, I mean, if they had a pill that cured it tomorrow, I'd certainly be first in line to take it, but I'm much better. I mean, it was such a bummer when I was young. Now I'm kind of like, well, gone this far, you know.
I had to touch on it. So Conan's at the Largo Theater in LA playing to a packed audience. You're working remotely. How's that process working?
Well, it's okay. You know, I do miss, it's funny, we have these Zoom meetings and, you know, we have those twice a day with the writers, and it's just nice to see everybody and the meetings are fun, and we're all kind of starved for some human contact, you know. I do miss seeing Conan. We used to meet with him. Laurie Kilmartin and I would meet with him every day to go over the monologue. We'd meet with him a couple of times. We'd meet with him around 2 o'clock, and then we'd meet with him at 4 o'clock right before the show taped. It was especially the 2 o'clock meeting was always great because he was very relaxed. It was a couple hours before the show. We'd go over the jokes. And then, you know, some days we're having a bad day and we had to, you know, get right back to work. But other days it was kind of like, hey, we're in good shape. And then it was always interesting hearing him talking about what was going on in the news or what was going on, you know, in society or just, you know, we would just have a normal conversation. And, you know, he's always funny and he's always, but he was, because the 4 o'clock meeting, he's about ready to get on the show. So he's really silly and comedic and just, you know, he's almost kind of performing at us before he goes out there as a warm up, him and Andy, you know. But the 2 o'clock meeting, he's more thoughtful and it's fun to see that side of him, you know.
You say it's the best part of your day, and I definitely understand why. You've been performing for Flappers Comedy Club. I just want to close with this. And
sure.
I don't know if these are live shows, remote, or what's going on there?
They're live shows, and they're Zoom show. You know, so I'm in my house. I've got a guest bedroom here where it's all set up, and I just, you know, and you know, these Zoom shows, I don't know how I'm doing. You know, you'd have a regular crowd.
Killing.
You know, it's like, oh, that joke didn't go so well, or this is a good crowd, or whatever. This is like, hey, you got me. I had one, and some of them, not necessarily Flappers, they don't do this, but other shows had do where they go, don't worry, we muted everyone in the crowd. It's like, well, wait. So we can't hear any laughs? Like, and I know they don't want, because you can hear people's lawnmowers or, you know, there's babies crying or whatever. And, you know, with Zoom shows, one loud person takes over the whole thing.
Yeah,
but you do like to hear a little bit of feedback, you know. Yeah. I'm always looking in the chat to see if anyone says something nice or liked a joke or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Well, you are the king of jokes, especially on Twitter. So I really do enjoy your tweets.
Well, thank you so much.
Now, on Twitter, who do you follow?
Well, it's, I follow a lot of my friends. You know, I follow Karen Ontowski and Dana Eagle, and I follow Jim Gaffigan, and I follow Conan. I follow Brian Regan. I'm sorry.
That's kind of a bad interview question because somebody's going to be left out. Maybe I can edit that out. We need Conan to edit me. It's a bad interview question.
I have a syndrome called podcast regret. Whenever I do a podcast, I always get, I'm going, oh, why did I say that? Or I should have said this or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
For taking the time.
Thanks. And they can follow me at Kylie Noodles. And actually, Kylie Noodles comes from Conan making fun of my skinny legs.
Yeah. And you use the term noodles in your book too.
Oh, good. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
We haven't touched on it, but I mean, do you have any personal experience with schizophrenia, Alzheimer's in your own life?
Not with schizophrenia, but I had relatives who had Alzheimer's when I was a kid, and it's so heartbreaking, especially when you have someone who's brilliant and so accomplished, and then it's such a heartbreaking disease.
Well, I won't leave on that upbeat note. I would like to just say good luck on Sunday, Cam Newton. Another vegan is taking control of the helm, and it's a new era for the Pats.
Yeah, it's going to be so – I'm so sad that Brady left, but I have to admit I'm so curious of what Cam can do, and he's got such a different style. And, what you know, we haven't seen a quarterback run with the ball in 30 years, I think, since Steve Grogan. So it's been a while.
I love how he handles himself.
Yeah, and him handing a ball to a little kid after a touchdown and all that stuff is always fun.
Yeah, how he handles himself on and off the field. So thanks again. I really appreciate it. And I will be checking out the shows, the Zoom shows, and hopefully we can give you some sort of feedback and let you know that we are enjoying them. But again, your Twitter is one of the highlights of my day. You're so consistent. You're just absolutely so consistent.
Well, thank you. This was so much fun talking to you.
Oh, I appreciate it, Brian. If you ever hit Portland, I'd love to see you at Helium, and they'd love to have you, I'm sure. Thanks again. I really appreciate it. Cheers.
Thank you. All right. Talk to you later. later. Bye.
Thank you so much, Brian. And thank you for listening to the Portland Podcast. I'm Gregory Druka Day. I produce and edit the show. If you'd like to contact me directly, you can reach me at greg@pdxpodcast.com. We'll be back with a brand new show very shortly. See you then.